Now it's Just Plane Radio.
Yeah.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can fly. Take me to the pilot, lead me to the tamer.
Take me to the pilot, I'm not a stranger. Brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
It's your lucky day.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
You got a plane.
Call Just Plane Radio toll free now at 888-884-2FLY.
And the sky's the limit.
That's 888-884-2359.
Sir, I'd like you to take the helm, please.
I'd be glad to. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me for another edition of Just Plane Radio, the show devoted to the aviation lifestyle and learning to fly. All right, so I am flying solo, at least for the first part of Just Plane Radio today, but I have pulled in some reinforcements. My instructors, Captain Keith and Ed, they're going to join us a little bit later on. But I pulled in the big guns. I got Tom Haynes from the AOPA with us right now. We are connected via the web, so it sounds like he's right here with me, even though he's clear across the country at AOPA headquarters. But Tom, welcome to Just Plane Radio. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Greg. Nice to hear from you, and good that you're getting a little solo practice out there.
Yeah, well, at least virtually. You know, okay. I haven't been doing a whole lot of flying in the plane, but I don't know. I've been doing some test flights here and there, and I went out to Air Venture for the first time ever a couple weeks ago and saw that crazy event. You were there. I missed you. I was at the end of the event the last weekend, but you've been going to Air Venture for how many years now, Tom? What do you think?
Interestingly, as near as I can recall and kind of running the math and knowing that there was one or two over the years that I've missed, but I'm pretty sure that was my 25th Air Venture.
Wow. Okay. And your feet still work, or do you got like serious calluses or what? I mean, I just did like a day and a half walking the show, and it is insane how big that event is.
It is remarkably big and quite a sight to see. I recommend, if you get a chance, to go up in a helicopter and see it from the air, because it's breathtaking to see the vastness of that thing. And interesting that you're an Oshkosh virgin, or you were.
Yeah.
We always recommend, when people say I'm going to Oshkosh for the first time, I usually recommend they bring, their high heels and the dress clothes, because, it's important that you look very fashionable when you're at Air Venture, right?
Yeah, well, I was wearing high heels. That turned a few heads. But, that's just how I roll. And you got to take the good with the bad. That would fall in the latter category, but I digress. Let's talk a little bit about Air Venture, because I was impressed with all the displays. I mean, Ford had a huge, huge presence at the event with their whole line of cars, and obviously, they're involved with Air Venture quite heavily on many projects. But one of the things we were talking about last week, and what I tapped into with our friends Jim and Deb that I was hanging with at the show, was these kit-built airplanes and that whole segment of the industry that was, something I wasn't really familiar with, other than, I've ran into a few people that said they're building their planes, and I've read a few things here and there. But obviously, that's a big section of Air Venture, and they had this 1 week of wonder where they were building a plane in a week, and that really captured my interest for sure. And I know you were involved with that a little bit as well, right?
I was. It was a remarkable project. Charlie Becker from EAA was kind of leading that project, and the goal was to take a Zenith, I think it was a 750 model, and start from ground zero of just the components, and by the end of the week have an airplane that was ready to taxi, and they all done with volunteers and bringing attendees in to help rivet the thing and put the pieces together. And I was honored to get to put a couple of rivets on that thing, got to sign the fuselage, got to sign the book saying that goes and lives with the airplane now to show who was involved in the building of it. And sure enough, they did taxi to the end of the week, and it flew a couple of days after Air Venture. Remarkable achievement.
Yeah, well, it was. I saw it the last weekend on Saturday afternoon. I was surprised. It did look like it was pretty much complete or almost ready to go. And it's interesting. They did invite me to do a rivet as well, but it was just on like a sample piece of sheet metal. They were wise enough not to allow me close to the actual plane to have any input or influence on whether this thing was going to fly. So at least they had that better judgment connected to this project. So hats off to them on that. But did you cover that initial flight or hear about how it went? I mean, I heard that it flew on Sunday, and I guess the following week as well.
Yeah, we did provide some coverage of that, and I understand it went very well, and I'm sure even with after first flight, obviously there's a lot of things on a kit-built airplane that still need to be tweaked and that sort of thing. So it's not quite done yet. I'm sure a lot of avionics and panel work needs to be done, but that's all the sort of thing that can happen in the upcoming weeks, and they're going to end up with a really great airplane.
Yeah. Now, what about that? Is that a kit-built segment of the industry, something you're personally involved with as well? Have you ever thought about building your own plane? Because when I looked into this and I talked to some of those kit-built manufacturers, I started thinking, like, wait a minute, it is a little bit more economical if you take away the fact that, you're providing your own labor. And it kind of, and obviously time is an issue. But I don't know. What do you think about that whole idea?
Well, it's changed so much over the years. When I first started covering general aviation now almost 30 years ago, believe it or not, the kit world was all about not even kit build, but experimental amateur build aircraft, and a lot of it was plans driven, where you didn't get a kit. You simply got a set of plans, and you were on your own to procure all the materials and to cut everything and fit everything. And it's really evolved into be much more sophisticated now, and that you truly get kits, and in some cases fast build kits, and in some cases, in the case of Glassstar, which I just flew over the weekend, they have a 2 weeks to taxi program where you take their fast build kit at the factory, and you spend 2 weeks there. And at the end of 2 weeks, you have essentially built the airplane with assistance from the factory and still meets the FAA's requirement for 51% participation by the builder. But at the end of 2 weeks, the airplane is literally ready to taxi, and it's, you know, short steps later, you're actually flying the airplane. So it's really changed over the years of how capable and how quickly the airplanes have become, or how quickly they come together. And so it's a much different world, and the number of airplanes from the experimental fleet or the amateur-built fleets coming online is just breathtaking. Vans Aircraft,
right,
which builds the RV line, is the number one producer of kit-built airplanes.
And that's who I was talking with. Jim had purchased one, and he's working, he had his tail section complete. It's a little project that he has on the side. He's a commercial pilot for United, I believe, but he's doing this on the side, and he has one of those Vans kits, and those were the people I was talking to, and about the numbers, and I was like, hey, this is a little bit more economical. It's a fun little challenge, a cool project. I don't know how comfortable I feel about flying in a plane that I had something to do with its creation. Part of me, it's kind of the left brain, right brain thing, going like, no, are you nuts? But then again, it would force you to kind of hunker down and know how your plane really operates, you think?
I absolutely agree. But I'm with you a little bit. I've always said that I never want to fly an airplane that I built. I think with the right amount of guidance, today almost anybody could, even I could build one with the right amount of guidance that you get from the factory. And then there's also some really good online communities. Vans Air Force is a group of builders online that provide all sorts of support. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, EAA has its chapters, over 1,000 chapters around the world that build airplanes and provide guidance to builders in their region. So there's quite a vast network of knowledge out there available to anybody who wants to build an airplane.
Yeah, so you got a lot of resources with AOPA, the internet, the manufacturers. Definitely something to consider, for sure. And very interesting segment of the industry that I might have to delve into a little bit more. I don't know. That's the one thing the guy at Vance said to me as well. He said, look, Greg, it's not difficult. Anybody could do this if they're willing to put the time in to, follow the instructions and the resources that we have available. It's not that hard. So I was like, okay.
A lot of the innovation in the industry is going on in the experimental world, and there are so few new certified or production airplanes being built a lot of the updating of the fleet is actually coming as a result of the experimental world and a lot of the innovation, same thing, avionics, autopilots, engine technology is very sophisticated in the experimental world and overtaking what we're seeing in the production side.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you got some manufacturers that are kind of, attempting to come out with new types of aircraft that are coming off the production line. This new, I don't know, what's that one that I saw? It had a huge presence there, the Icon there at AirVenture. That looked kind of interesting to me, that amphibious flying machine. Have you had any experience with that yet, or just are you just kind of watching it from the sidelines like myself?
We've been covering it ever since it was introduced a number of years ago, maybe 2007, but quite a few years ago now. Nobody outside the company has flown it yet. They've only got a couple of airplanes flying. What they introduced at AirVenture was their sort of their first production airplane as a engineering prototype. And it is an amphibious light sport airplane. And so you can fly it without a medical certificate, so with only a driver's license as a medical certificate. And so it's an interesting project. It'll be fun to see where it goes.
There you go. Definitely. We got Tom Haines from AOPA Live, NAOPA, and Flight Training Magazine. He does all kinds of stuff at AOPA, and he's going to stay with us for the next segment. Stick around. More coming up on Just Plane Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle. Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
Whether you're a flight student, an experienced pilot, or simply an aviation enthusiast, there is a place for you as a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Join AOPA to get the latest general aviation news, safety resources, and technical support you need to sharpen your skills and become a central part of the nation's vibrant general aviation community. Learn more about becoming a member at AOPA.org. That's AOPA.org.
Deepwater Cay in the Bahamas has been a hotspot for world-class anglers and Hollywood stars for over 50 years. They fly into Freeport or take advantage of the 4,000-foot private runway. So in as little as 20 minutes from Florida, you too could be experiencing world-class fishing, diving, paddleboarding, whatever your adventurous heart desires, Deepwater Cay delivers. So treat yourself like the star that you are at Deepwater Cay's private island resort in the Bahamas. Go to deepwatercay.com. That's deepwatercay.com.
With Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
This test today, it's important.
I got it. I'm going to make you look good up there. Don't worry, okay? Now let's get these pants off and fly some planes.
I'm learning to fly around the clouds. But what goes up must come down.
And we're going to grease that landing today on Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me. And hanging with me right now for the big show, Tom Haines from AOPA. Check out his, their weekly TV show they do on the web, AOPA Live. And, of course, he writes for Flight Training Magazine or, I don't know, you basically run the whole thing, right? You're the big cheese. How many more accolades can we give you, Tom?
Great staff who makes it all happen, and I just kind of show up and they make it easy.
Yeah, that's what all the big guns say. You know, that's why he's such a big, mover and shaker in the industry. And we like him. I mean, he's willing to share his time with schmoes like us here at Just Plane Radio. So we do appreciate your time, Tom. All right, let's talk about some of the other things that you guys are kind of monitoring for the industry. AOPA is kind of our legislative arm, or at least watchdog, to keep the government at bay or at least informed so they don't do something crazy to shut down our favorite thing, which is learning to fly or flying our airplanes, that kind of thing. And I know, the third class medical, might as well get that one out of the way. That one's been on the forefront for some time now, right?
Oh, it has been. It's the number one issue that our members talk to us about, and we've been spending a lot of time and effort on trying to get that through, and we think we've got some good momentum going.
Yeah, and all we're trying to do is just say, hey, just loosen up the restrictions just a tad. You're putting all these extra, you know, bumps in the road for people to be able to fly their airplanes that are really just not necessary. And the statistics as far as health issues creating a problem for a pilot, especially for general aviation, just don't exist.
That's right. There's just no statistical data that supports the idea that the third class medical improves safety in any way. And so it's just a matter of us helping the government understand that, making them comfortable with the idea that pilots, if they can hold a driver's license, that that's enough of a threshold, as well as the self-assessment that we all do before every flight anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
We've had the light sport market for the last decade or so flying by self-assessment, and we've had glider pilots flying forever doing the same thing. And so there's no reason that those of us who fly light airplanes can't also self-assess each time we fly, because we do anyhow. And if we don't feel well or have some reason to believe that we're not healthy, we don't fly.
Yeah.
And so the fact that we go to the doctor every 2 or 5 years, depending on how old you are, for one day, for one quick visit by an aviation medical examiner, really does nothing to improve the safety situation.
Yeah, and it ends up mine's due right now. And I'm a little annoyed because I just had a physical from my general practitioner, and I got to go do this thing, you know, kind of a check for $100, which, yeah, they got to make a few bucks here and there. I understand that. But I'm like, hey, look, and my other doctor said I'm fine. Why would it make any difference? Come on. You know,
yep.
And look at me. I'm the epitome of health. Okay, maybe I'm not the perfect example, but I digress. You know, it's just one of those things AOPA is working on for us to make general aviation more accessible to everybody. And that's what it's all about, sharing our love, our passion for flying. All right, let's talk about one of the other things that you guys have been dealing with. And this is something that drives Captain Ed and Keith crazy every time I bring it up. And that is these unmanned aerial systems, these drones that are getting, yep, a lot of play. And I see this as a major problem. And evidently, I'm not alone. You guys are fielding a lot of questions from AOPA members about these things, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's also a big issue, and one that we've been actually looking at and dealing with for 10 years. I mean, for at least 7 years, and maybe it's closer to 10 years, we've been saying to the FAA, hey, you're going to have a problem down the road with, mm-hmm, with UAS, with drones, because they're going to become popular. People are going to want to use them, and you have no regulations in effect on how they can be used, where they can be used, and they can be a threat to manned aircraft if they're not properly managed and regulated. And the FAA did not move. And so here we are all these years later, behind the rest of the world from a regulatory standpoint when it comes to drones. And the FAA has just been slow to respond. They've been now finally mandated by Congress recently to move forward more quickly. And they have just recently, in the last, just this year, finally put into place six, after missing a congressionally mandated deadline of last year, might add. But nonetheless, they put in six test facilities where they can study drones and the impact of them on the airspace. AOPA's position, though, hasn't changed. It's that in order to operate inside the National Airspace System alongside manned aircraft, drones must be able to sense and avoid other aircraft just like pilots can.
Yeah, I mean, it's common sense. I mean, when this started coming up on my radar, you know, about a year and a half ago, when I was starting my flight training, I was reading these articles about the drones, and knowing what I know from the dive industry, because these things are very popular for dive industry folks to film above dive boats and get some, mm-hmm, aerial shots of some of the islands and things. I started thinking, wait, I already got to avoid birds. Now I'm going to have to avoid some yeehaws flying to try to take a picture of some house or something, or, you know, get a picture of some lady who's sunbathing in her backyard topless. So, you know, I'm like, hey.
TMI, Greg. TMI.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying.
It sounds like thoughts that I think you have from time
to time. No, I've seen this on the web. I've read about it. That's all. I haven't seen the video. But, yeah, we don't really need that extra aggravation, and these guys don't really realize the potential hazard they're creating for folks or general aviation pilots, let alone commercial pilots, right?
Yeah, and you know, the point is the genie's out of the bottle. I mean, the great UAS drones are going to be used commercially, and so and they can provide a lot of value. There are real benefits to them, things they can do that aren't safe or practical for manned aircraft to do, and so we need to recognize that and figure out how to incorporate them into the NAS, the National Aviation System, safely.
Yeah, well, that's what FAA is working on, and obviously AOPA is trying to work with them to push them and get this done quicker. So we'll see where that goes, and I know you guys will monitor that accordingly. Now, the other great thing you guys do is, especially this year, you're doing these fly-ins. You just had one last weekend. That was in Spokane, right?
That's right. It was a great show.
And you did. You have the pancake breakfast and the whole thing going on that last weekend, or what?
Yeah, you bet. The local EA chapter cooked breakfast for our members. We had some 1,600 or so members fly in better part of 250 aircraft land at Feltz Field in Spokane on Saturday, and there was camping. A few people there camping on Friday night, and it's a really neat airport with a lot of classic airplanes on it and some just unbelievable airplanes and a really vibrant pilot community up in that part of the world, up in the Northwest. And so we had a great show. It was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of the social benefits of an event like AirVenture with all the headaches and the big crowds, right?
Right. Low commitment. Show up. If you're an AOPA member, lunch was on us, like it is at all the fly-ins this year. And breakfast is all of $5. And so just enjoy the day. So the whole event is free otherwise, seminars, static displays of aircraft, and just a lot of camaraderie of pilots.
And the next ones happen when?
Yeah, we got two more, actually three more this year. One coming up in September on the 20th out in Chino, California. And then on October 4th is the big AOPA Homecoming, our 75th anniversary event here in Frederick, Maryland. And then coming up later down your way.
All right, Tom Haines from AOPA, thank you so much. Go to AOPA.org for more information, and we got more coming up on Just Plain Radio next. Stay close.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I've been up around the stratosphere at 31,000 feet. Here on wings that you can't see. If you're gonna fly high without fear, you're gonna have to learn to love the atmosphere, and you gotta learn to use those wings you can't see.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me. Now, I've sent Tom Haines from the AOPA on his way, and before I get Keith on the line, or Ed, or both of them, who knows who's going to show up, I do have Clay, my good buddy from Explorer Ventures, runs a liveaboard company for the dive industry and is also a private pilot, just got a new plane. And I had to have him on because he did tell me last week about a little incident you had with your new flying vehicle. Is that right, Clay?
Well, it wasn't really an incident. It could have been an incident. I didn't really know at the time, but it ended up being a very nice non-event, which was good.
Yeah, and basically, it made you fly around the airport for about an hour or two to dump fuel or burn off fuel because you had a problem with a little light that came on and was associated with your landing gear, and that's never good.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was going to go out to do night currency. You've got to, in order to carry passengers, do three takeoffs and landings to a full stop at night within the previous 90 days. So I thought I'd take advantage of a beautiful evening and go out and get night current.
Yeah.
So I went up and I dinked around for a little bit and had a nice flight. And then I came back to practice some instrument approaches and do a landing out of it. And I put the gear down, and only two out of the three lights came on.
You really want all three to come on when you're trying to land your plane, I'm guessing. Two out of three isn't good.
It is close, but no cigar. So, I muttered a few choice words and then ended up circling the airport for a little bit. The tower just closed, so I just broadcast occasionally with my location, and ended up circling the airport for a while, doing every going through the checklist, doing every emergency extension procedure, and trying various airspeeds and this and that and the other. And I finally called the local fire department that's based on the airport. I know they have 24-hour fire department there.
Right.
And called them on the phone and said, had a little bit of a problem. I couldn't tell whether the gear was down or not. I'd recycled it many times, done everything I could think of. So they ended up coming out and verifying that the gear looked down at least.
You landed and it was okay. It just ended up being a light sensor.
Yep, pretty much. It was luckily a non-event. So I didn't bend any metal and I could fly the airplane again.
Well, that's always good. And you got a little practice on emergency procedures.
Exactly.
All right, there you go. More coming up on Just Plain Radio. Stay close.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
You are now clear for takeoff with Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
How soon can you land?
I can't tell.
You can tell me I'm a doctor.
No, I mean I'm just not sure.
Well, can't you take a guess?
Well, not for another 2 hours.
You can't take a guess for another 2 hours?
Come fly with me. Let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me. Let's fly away. They say, come fly with me, let's fly away.
This is Just Plain Radio, Greg, your co-pilot, that's me, along with Captain Ed and Captain Keith. Yes, they finally joined our crew to make us a fully functional flight crew.
Fully here on Just Plain. Functional flight crew.
Fully what?
Dysfunctional flight crew.
Well, okay, that could be, too. Just depends on your perspective. But they do join me, and I've been flying solo so far. And, you know, pretty much unscathed with the exception of, you know, only two of lights came on Clay's airplane when he tried to land as opposed to three, which is what he really looks for. You know, unlike horseshoes and hand grenades, you need all three. Not two so out of three ain't bad, doesn't work in that scenario, I guess.
I guess.
But he was okay because it was just a light sensor. Is that typical?
Two out of three did work.
Two out of three did work. I guess, you know, you could say two out of three ain't bad, but that is bad.
Not in landing gear. Three out of three is the only thing that's good.
Correct. And so he ended up flying around the airport for an hour to dump fuel and have him look at his landing gear.
Which gear was it?
No, he didn't dump fuel. You sound like a reporter.
Oh.
He didn't dump fuel. He burned the fuel off. He was trying to burn fuel
off.
There
you go.
And actually, he was making passes over so the guys at the airport could, you know, take a look.
Was it the nose gear? Was it one of the main gears?
I think it was one of the side sensors or something that, if I remember right. It was a left or right. I want to say right for some reason, but I don't recall.
What year is that airplane?
80-something. I want to say, but it's totally it's been redone.
Well, I know that Piper changed those switches sometime in the 80s. That I know, like the Seminole we had that was in 89, had the newer beefed up gear switches. Mm-hmm. I had that problem when we were up at Comair Academy probably two or three times a month. I get a call that we had an airplane in the pattern without a gear indication. It was usually the switch not making contact, and it was a known weak point. And,
yeah, he said
and
it
so
was
Piper redesigned them sometime in the late 80s. And
we said a pin or something had wiggled out. Does that make any sense?
A pin.
What does that mean in aviation lingo, Keith?
That means there was an option that was left off of it.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Something came loose, is what he said, and the light didn't trigger. We'll just go with that.
But it was down and locked.
Correct. Yeah. He had no problem. He landed. It was a non-incident. It just ended up, he got an extra hour of flight time.
Yeah.
But one thing to note on a situation like this, it doesn't matter what kind of an airplane you're flying. You can fly past the tower, and all they can and will tell you is that it appears to be down.
Yes.
Well, they can't say anything else. They can't tell you that it appears to be locked. They can just tell you it appears to be down.
Well, give you an idea of how common this was. You know, we flew probably 9,000 hours a month at the academy when I was there, and a good bit of that was in the Twins and Seminoles. And, you know, so, like I say, a couple, three times a month, I'd get the call. We'd go through the process. We'd get maintenance involved. We'd talk to them on the radio. We'd have them do the flyby. And then finally we said, okay, you know, authorize a landing. We'd tell them to make a full stop landing on the runway, come to a complete stop. Maintenance would meet them. And in that time, the gear, you know, out of maybe 100, three times the gear was actually not locked.
Hmm.
Two of the times, because they stopped on the runway, the mechanic was able to get underneath the wing with a hammer and tap the lock in place. The third time...
No, wait a minute. Hold on. He was able to tap the gear
just
and...
tap the lock mechanism that holds it in the lock position. It's just a little J-hook, kind of like your finger, if you make it look like a hook, that's all that really holds that down and locked.
Okay. So you're saying after... They've landed?
They landed, they came to a complete stop on the runway. Engine was shut down. Maintenance went out on the runway, checked the gear before we taxi cleared to make sure they were locked.
Yeah.
And like I say, two of those times, they were able to just tap it with a hammer and get it to lock. The other times it was locked, it was just a switch problem. Mm-hmm. Well, the third time, it was actually down in Key West, where they were talking to me over the telephone through the control tower. I told them, okay, you know, probably locked. Let's go ahead and make a landing. And I'm listening to the controller. He keeps me on the line while the guy's making the landing. He's, oh, looks good. And, I spoke too soon. And as the airspeed dissipated and the weight transferred to the gear collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean, the airplane ended up still just a little bit off to one side, but still on the runway. And
right.
And all
and
that.
Everybody was safe.
And everybody was safe and all that.
And that's what Clay told me, actually, before we talked about this on the air earlier. I had talked to him earlier in the week, and he had told me what happened. And I said, well, you know, did that kind of increase the pucker factor a bit on that you know, as you're preparing for this potentially emergency situation? And he said, well, he goes, honestly, I didn't really freak out at all. I didn't get too nervous because I figured, well, the worst case scenario, the landing gear wasn't going to lock and I was going to skid up my airplane pretty good.
Yeah.
And that was it. He said, other than that, I wasn't, you know, worried about anything because I know I could put the plane down with not a problem.
Now, when you're in the flare and you're about to touch down, you tell everybody to make a nice, smooth landing.
Mm-hmm. Grease it, baby!
Well, most of the time, they're so nervous, they slam it on and test that gear.
Ah.
Stress test that gear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, he didn't say how good of a landing he did, by the way. But it was also on a night flight.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, the thing is, the airport that he was landing in was closed. And so he had to call the local fire department to come out there and meet him at the airport and take a look. So it was these guys from the fire department were the ones telling him on his cell phone whether or not they thought his landing gear was down. So these are not necessarily pilot-friendly instructions or observations. These guys are, well, you know, it looks, I see a wheel, you know. So, I don't know, but Clay's kind of a calm, you know, even-keeled type of guy. So he handled it well, and everything was fine. But you're saying that is a fairly common occurrence.
Especially in the older Piper retractable gear airplane.
Yeah.
You know, built prior to 89 or somewhere in that time frame. I don't know what year they switched those gear switches.
Right. And so when that happens, as a matter of fact, I remember, Keith, you telling a story just a few weeks ago about stuff like this, because I asked you if you had ever had situations where your gear didn't come down. You said, if I recall correctly, that you had a special technique where you kicked the landing gear out manually one time, or had to, or tried it.
No. I did not kick it out. It what we do is you just yaw the airplane and get the... We'll have to have Ed draw you a picture on this.
Well, he's doing it in the studio right now. So he's swinging back and forth wildly, kind of like he's twerking. And, okay, so you're yawing the airplane back and forth, using gravity of the airplane kind of to swing
using the momentum. If the gear's not locked, it starts swinging, and then it kicks out and locks.
I got you.
And that works for the main gears, and then pitching the nose up and down for the nose gear.
Okay. I don't want to have to do that.
I've actually had to do both. One on an Arrow and once on a Seminole.
Yeah. I think I'll just stick to a three-wheeler.
Piper's not getting a real good buzz this week. All we're talking about is gear problems and Pipers.
Yeah.
Well, it happens. You know, and the thing is you know, he always looked at the bright side. He had an opportunity to practice his emergency procedures. You know, you got an extra hour of night flying. So, you know, the cup is half empty or half full. It's half full, yeah. Right?
Right.
Okay.
You know, it's always good to practice that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
It is. And all
and now he knows what how he's going to react in that situation.
Which was well. He handled it quite well. I'm just glad I wasn't with him. Because I don't know if I would have handled it quite as well as he was. Especially if you're a passenger in that situation. That has to be more unnerving for the passenger than it does for the pilot, you think?
Well, because it's fear of the unknown. You know, pilots, we train for that kind of stuff. You know, I had it happen to me in the CRJ as well. The nose gear wouldn't come down one night. So, you know, you fly around, you do all your procedures and everything else. And eventually the nose is going to come down after the tail stops flying. So everything turned out all right. But, yeah, we trained for it. So it's the passengers. It's just the fear of the unknown.
Just the fear of the unknown and, you know.
That in Hollywood, because Hollywood makes everything look so dramatic. I mean, you run out of fuel in an airplane and, you know, the thing starts, you know, pitching and rolling and, you know, it's uncontrollable because you ran out of fuel. And that's just, you know, not the case, as we all know.
This is true. They're always trumping up stuff in the media and on TV. You know, Discovery Channel has Shark Week. Maybe Airplane Week is just stays away. They're going to start that and run a week-long adventure of plane crashes. That would just suck. But it'd be a ratings bonanza. So, yeah, I'm sure it's in the works. All right, we're coming up on Just Plane Radio. Stay close.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive.
Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations.
Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night.
Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
For nearly 75 years, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has been a beacon for those who cherish the freedom to fly. AOPA protects your rights as a pilot by fighting airspace restrictions, fuel taxes, user fees, airport closings, and other issues that threaten your ability to take to the sky. AOPA is on the front lines every day to ensure that general aviation and the interests of its members are promoted and safeguarded. Learn more about how you can become a member at AOPA.org.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Now go, fly, be free.
Time for me to fly. Oh, I
got to set myself free.
Time for me to fly.
That's just how it's got to be. I know it hurts to say goodbye, but it's time for me to fly.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Ed and Captain Keith from Flight Training Professionals, ftpros.com, the website to go to and learn how to fly with them as your instructor. And eventually, they're going to start teaching me again. What do you think, Ed? Is that going to happen?
How cold,
have you given up
how
on
cold
me?
Is it?
Something's freezing over.
I've not given up on you, but you know, we retired your ride, so we got to find
a new ride. My medical certificate is due again.
Good for you.
So that means I have to get another one.
How often does that have to get renewed?
Every year. Two. Or two.
I'm glad to see your study.
No, it's two. It's two.
24 calendar months.
Right. So mine's due again.
When's it due?
I think I got like 2 weeks or something left on it. Does that make sense? Your computer system, like, sent me an email. Like, Greg, get with the program. Your medical certificate is about to expire.
Well, if it's in August, then it will expire on the end of the month, last day of the month.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
That sounds good. But if I let it expire, that just means I can't train, right?
No, you can train. You just can't solo.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I'll get that taken care of.
Not that we have to worry about it.
Well, thanks, Keith. Thanks for the support. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry. Was that my outside voice?
All right. Well, anyway, a couple things wanted to bring up that we've been talking about a couple weeks ago, this air pooler idea where this guy around the Boston area was trying to set up a ride share kind of thing for airplanes. Sounded like a great idea. You got like 800 pilots to sign up in the area. Start this online business where people could put up, hey, I'm flying here. I got 2 seats available. Fill them up and share the cost. Ooh, the FAA didn't like it. And as you predicted, both of you guys said.
Yep.
I see a red flag here. They're not gonna like this part 191, you know, code stuff that the FAA, all these red flags and speed bumps they put in the way of trying to make flying easier for us. Right?
Well, in that instance, they're trying to protect the public safety and the people.
But these are pilots, aren't they? I mean, I think that was the idea, at least.
Well, no.
It is. But the fact that pilots that fly either for a 135 operation or for a 121 operation, that's 135 is charter, 121 is airline, mm-hmm. they've gone through more training, and that's the whole key. And that's what the FAA is looking at.
Yeah.
Well, and the other side of it is the airplane. The airplane has to go through more scrutiny in 135 and 121. And, you know, there are people out there, mechanics, certified mechanics, that'll do your 100-hour for $500 or your annual inspection for $500. Did mm-hmm. they really open everything up and inspect everything?
Probably not.
You know, normally it's going to cost around $1,200 to $1,500. So you're getting a great savings, but yeah, I question whether you're getting great safety.
Okay. So that's all the FAA is caring about is the safety for these folks trying to put this thing together. I mean, you know, I guess a part of it is like, well, if you're going to take, realize that the safety factor may not be as good, then why not let these guys do this? You know, if you're like, hey, okay, yeah, it may not be the ideal, you know, safest way to travel, but I'm willing to save a few bucks and it's more convenient for me to fly this way. You know, why should they stop?
Okay, now mm-hmm. let's go through what it takes to become certified to do this. There's applications that have to be made, compliance statements that have to be submitted to the FAA, an inspection of the aircraft, an inspection of the facility, and the pilot must take a flight test, and not to mention meet all the required minimums, which is either 500 hours total time.
Right.
Okay, and so now let's look at the time and expense to do that. So this company that goes through and gets this approved, that takes the time to do things right, is now being, of course, it's going to cost more to do that.
Yeah.
Then this company comes along and they're undercutting them. They're undercutting the safety. They're undercutting the price. If the FAA allowed that to go, they're giving people an unfair advantage over the people that follow the rules.
Well, it depends if you're comparing apples to apples. I'm not sure if you are, because in this scenario, they're saying, okay, say you have a 4-seat airplane.
Mm-hmm.
I got 2 people. I got 2 seats available.
Yep.
Normally, you could, if you had 4 friends, you do it and you split the fuel or split everything like you're supposed to.
Yep.
In this scenario, you just don't know the other 2 people, but you're still splitting it evenly.
Okay, you're holding it out to the general public. And if you're holding out your goods and services to the general public for air carrier operations, that's either charter or air carrier operations, and it is strictly governed. That's the issue. They're holding it out to the general public. That's what the rule is for. And there are plenty of people that are doing this in bigger airplanes, too.
Yeah.
And the FAA will sit here and tell us we want to catch him, we try to catch him, but unless we catch him in the act, we can't really do anything to him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to, you know, these guys are, you know, definitely in the public spotlight. They know they're doing it, so they have no choice but to say, you can't do it.
Well, they are supposedly the man behind this business. They've obviously shut down operations right now, but they do have a meeting scheduled with the FAA. What would you recommend he take into this meeting, Keith, to get the FAA to allow them to do business?
Well, you know, like Ed said, you know, the FAA is going to want to see all the documentation of everything that Ed was just talking about, the airplane, the pilots, the office that they have, the scheduling system, everything. They're going to want to see it all.
Including large bills.
Well, no, that's not the...
A few Benjamins to grease the wheels. It's a tip.
They cannot accept.
No tipping.
No tipping.
Oh, well, okay. All right, well, that'll do it for this week. Till next time, remember, there's no better high
than learning to fly.
Just Plane Radio is brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plane Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlaneRadio.com.
I'm going to lead my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plane Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Listen up, everybody. I have some news.
The opinions you just heard on Just Plane Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
We are screwed.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
A little too far. Cross the line.
There are many factors to consider before learning to fly.
What is your problem?
So make sure you do your own research and get the proper instruction before your exploration into aviation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at JustPlaneRadio.com.